Have you here today, for the benefit of those who have never argued here, we have this lighting system. You also have the timing on your side that tells you how much time you have left in your argument. But when that yellow light comes on, that means that you begin to bring your argument to a close. And when the red light comes on, we expect you to bring your argument to a close at about that point. These cases are being recorded today for the benefit of us in writing any opinions that come out of these hearings, but also the arguments that you make are being broadcast, so that they're available to the public, and so you need to be on your best P's and Q's whenever you're speaking there, and also not to move away from the podium, because we lose your sound when you get away from that podium. And finally, I would mention to you that rebuttal is for rebuttal only, and we don't expect you to bring up any arguments in rebuttal that have not previously been addressed either by you or your opponent. And with that, we'll call the first case of the day, and that's United States of America versus Menchaca. Is that right? Menchaca. And we will hear from Ms. Landau.
May it please the court. The issue before the court is whether exigent circumstances existed to justify entry into a residence, given that the suspect had fled and there was no reason to believe that others were present, much less that they were armed. Physical entry into the home is the primary evil against which the Fourth Amendment is targeted. As such, warrantless entry into the home is per se presumptively unreasonable unless it is justified by both probable cause and exigent circumstances. The government has the burden of demonstrating both of these things. Mr. Menchaca does not contest the existence of probable cause, only of the presence of exigent circumstances. The government, to demonstrate exigent circumstances, must have specific, articulable facts and rational inferences to be drawn from those facts, which means no hunches, generalizations, guesses, or suspicions, including those about danger to officers. The court has indicated in the Howard case that the mere presence of drugs alone does not give rise to exigent circumstances, but the district court essentially did that here. It assumed from the presence of drugs both that others would be present and that there would be weapons.
Counsel, is there any other basis to justify them going in that house other than exigency?
Not that appears from the record, Your Honor.
They didn't advance consent or anything like that?
He was not there to consent.
How about the open door?
Well, it if
he
you...
He left it open.
And the landlord, the owner's right there, and she needs to go in, wants to go in.
Well, under this court's case law, the landlord cannot consent on behalf of the lessee.
The door's open.
Well, if you read Peyton versus New York, it's that crossing of the threshold. So even if you leave your door a crack open, that is not enough to permit entry. Otherwise, the police could just go in any door that was open.
What does the record show that the officers did when they went in to the residence as far as anything that might be considered an instant protective sweep, looking for other people or firearms or anything?
The record is pretty sparse about that, Your Honor. What happened is the officers approached the door. It was open. We don't know exactly who opened it. The record's unclear on that, and it doesn't really matter for our purposes, as we agree that probable cause existed. One of the officers smelled marijuana. He'd already been told that marijuana was in the house in the living room. He announced. I'm not sure if he knocked. I can double check that.
That's all right.
But they smelled marijuana. They couldn't see it from the door. They open the door. They walk in. They see it, and there's no more indication of any. They said they secured the house, but there's not detail about whether they looked for people everywhere, what exactly that entails.
They make much of the idea of an officer and public safety and the possibility of guns because they're tools of the trade, but they didn't put on any evidence of continuing past that to be sure there were no other people or weapons or anything in the rest of the house?
I didn't see anything like that in the record. They did say they secured the house, and I...
Something about entering a bedroom, wasn't there?
I'll have to double-check that. I don't recall that, Your Honor. But the interesting part about the safety justification is they were concerned about their own safety and the safety of the landlady and her family. Why were the landlady and her family still standing there if it was so dangerous? Why didn't they leave? Why weren't they instructed to leave? And why couldn't the officers have just waited outside and secured the outside? Why wouldn't that have been enough? There was no evidence either about how long it would have taken to get a warrant or why that was impracticable.
Was there any argument about the fact that if there'd been guns, why did he need a tire tool to attack the...
I was about to get to that, Your Honor. The facts here do cut against. The information that the police had cuts against the idea that there were weapons. What happened is that Mr. Menchaca, once he got wind of his landlady and her niece calling the police, he followed them outside, got on his knees, and begged for mercy, asked them not to call the police, please. And I submit that that also cuts against the people, because if you have a posse and you have weapons, you don't beg for mercy. You get your people out, and you get your weapons out. So then what he did is he went back inside, he gets in his car, he tries to leave, but the landlady and her niece are blocking his exit. And so he goes into the garage, gets a tire tool, swings it at her. She's still in the driveway for some reason, and he leaves. He's just trying to get out of there. And at that point, there's no indication of weapons or other people. So I don't really know that the inference there would be reasonable that there are other people present or that they would have weapons. So if you have a weapon, you don't use a tire tool. If you have a weapon, you don't beg for mercy. If there are other people there, they don't stay hidden. They would flee. That's their chance to leave or their chance to help Mr. Menchaca. It really cuts against the conclusions that the district court drew. They really needed to show why they couldn't have gotten a warrant and just waited outside. To the extent that they thought that they were in danger, why would they walk into something that would be more dangerous when they could be in a position of strength from outside?
What does the record show that the landlord told the first officers there about the quantity of the marijuana inside?
She used the phrase bundles. She wasn't
able... It'd take a while to flush that down the toilet, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. If you have enough marijuana that you can smell it from a doorway, that is probably not a small personal use amount that can be readily disposed of. That is a lot of marijuana.
I mean, did the government ever consider just using the landlord as a witness and not even using the government as a witness? I mean, could they have done that? I mean, they came in, we identify it, we've seen marijuana before. They were bundles of marijuana. I don't know how much. They proved possession of marijuana on the part of him. The government is not involved in it, and there's your conviction.
I mean, use her to convict him? I'm sorry, I don't understand.
I'm just saying why. There's any reason the government didn't approach it from that point of view. Don't use the search and seizure. Use the witnesses that walked into it, his landlord and tenant, saw it, identified it. And after that, the man ran. He begged him not to turn him into the police. I mean, they would have had the conviction and never put the police on.
That's an interesting question, Your Honor. You'll have to ask the government why they didn't proceed in that fashion.
That didn't happen anyway.
It did not. This case is so far outside the court's case law about what constitutes exigent circumstances. The court has never held, and I went back to about 1980, never held that where the suspect is known to have fled and there is no indication of other people in the house or weapons, that could somehow constitute exigent circumstances. There's not even a case that's close. The case that the government relies upon, De Jesus Batres, is factually extremely different from this case. There, it's an alien hostage-taking case where one of the aliens ran to a firehouse, encountered police, told him that aliens were being held at this house, and they all went back. The landlady there consented to... The owner of the house, not the landlady. The owner consented to their entry. I mean, it's just completely different. There you have an ongoing crime where people are in danger. This case, the exigency left with Mr. Menchaca. To the extent that he was a threat, he was somewhere else. The police should have hunted him down, not entered his house. I would like to point out, in my review for this argument, the standard of review is something I would like to talk about. While in the brief we say that the standard of review is clearly erroneous, this court's law indicates it's slightly more complicated than that. In a case like this, where the facts are really not in dispute, only the conclusions to be drawn from those facts, the court's review is essentially de novo. And for that, I would cite the Temez versus City of San Marcos case, 118 F3rd 1085 at page 1094, and the Vega case, 221 F3rd, page 789. So the court is not even really confined by any factual findings by the district court, because the district court didn't really make any, only concluding that exigent circumstances existed for a set of reasons. In short, the government has failed to prove exigent circumstances, and Mr. Menchaca's conviction should be vacated.
Okay, thank you very much for your argument. Ms. Alanis.
May it please the court. The district court's finding in this case that exigent circumstances existed is not clearly erroneous. That is the standard of review for reviewing the factual findings underpinning the exigent circumstances decision.
What is your best case that would hold that exigent circumstances are present in this case?
There are a number of cases that support various propositions. I think in this case it comes down to whether the officer's belief that someone could still be in the house was reasonable under the totality of the circumstances. The officer, Villarreal, who was the first one on the scene and the first one in the home, testified that safety of himself and the bystanders was his primary concern. There was also the government's theory that the person in the house might be able to also destroy or remove evidence as well, but clearly safety was the motivating factor
here.
What
evidence did they have that anybody else may possibly be in the house?
Well, I think it's a chain of circumstances, Your Honor. You have Officer Villarreal. He is called to this scene in South McAllen. He is told that there is a landlord-tenant dispute going on. When he arrives, he encounters these two hysterical women. He says they're crying, they're confused, they're very upset, and they relate this story that Mrs. Garcia, who is the one half of the married couple that owns the property, had not heard from Mr. Menchaca. He had rented the apartment several months, or the home several months earlier, and had not paid any rent. So they were coming to check on him to see if he was still there, to see if there was a problem with the property. So they arrive, her husband is with her, and her niece, Ms. San Miguel. They knock on the door, and he doesn't answer. And they keep knocking, he doesn't answer. Mr. Garcia actually goes around the side of the house, peers in a window, and sees Mr. Menchaca, and says,
please open. Only Menchaca, the defendant. It was someone had been around the house, had looked into the windows, and saw only one person in the house. Then they come to the door, only one person is there. Then they have all of the commotion about protecting the load of marijuana, and only one person is there to defend it with a tire tube. It seems like there is absolutely not a speck of evidence, that would justify thinking anyone else was anywhere in the premises.
Well, I respectfully disagree, Your Honor.
Tell me what it is.
Mr. Garcia did not look in all the windows of the home. He looked in apparently just one bedroom window and saw Mr. Menchaca. Also, there is the evidence that when the landlady goes in the home, sees she and the niece see the marijuana, they become frightened and they retreat. Mrs. Garcia tells her niece, call the police. And he becomes very agitated. He throws himself on his knees and begs them, please don't call the police. I have a wife and family. That also, I think, raises a concern. Where are those people?
Well, let me ask you what I ask counsel opposite now that you bring that up. Let's say that under normal circumstances, you might want to be sure there's nobody else there. What did this officer and any other officers do? You said he looked in one room. And what did they do about the rest of the house?
That the record is unclear. It was the landlord who peered in the window. There's
no, but what I'm saying is when the officer went through the open door, found the marijuana, did he or any other officer do what we have constantly had described to us as a protective sweep? Go quickly with guns drawn through every room, the bathrooms, the washrooms, the kitchen, the bedrooms, and to be sure, looking in closets and under beds, that there's no one there that might ambush them with a weapon.
The record was not developed with questions about exactly what they did, but I do believe Officer Villarreal said, we cleared the house, meaning that, I interpret that as meaning, yeah, we looked to see who might be there. They did not find another person. They did not find a firearm.
Could you take a minute? Are you through with that answer?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Are you through with the answer you just gave?
Oh, yes,
Could you
Your
take
Honor.
A minute and tell me just exactly what the officer said to justify his entry?
He said that he was primarily concerned with his safety, the safety of the bystanders there, and that was his primary concern.
He didn't explain that. He just said this.
He did explain. He said, of course, he knew the landlady had told him bundles of marijuana are in the house. Of course, that is indicative of drug trafficking. He stated that, of course, he was well aware that firearms are tools of the trade in drug trafficking. He was concerned about the possibility. He said, we simply did not know who was in that house with the information we had. We were concerned, and that was basically his
what
explanation.
What keeps just the same concern for safety for them standing there calling? It's daytime, it's not night. It's a weekday, it's not the weekend. Getting a warrant would have taken no effort, and they're there to be sure nobody leaves or takes the drugs or destroys them. Why wouldn't that be more protective than going into the house?
In hindsight, Your Honor, that would have been an excellent thing to do, but...
Well, that's what you do with the suppression hearing is hindsight.
Well, we go, and this court is required, and the district court is required to stand in the shoes of that officer and look at all the factors that he's having to consider. He's considering his safety. He's considering the bystander's safety. The record shows this also occurred in a residential area about a block from a middle school. He knows all these things, and he's evaluating. It's a split-second decision. He has arrived in the middle of this chaotic scene.
It happened to be split second. He's already interviewed two of them, the woman and the niece.
He has interviewed
them. He's gotten
all
the information about a tire tool and begging and things like that.
He has interviewed them. He knows that there is a drug trafficker who's stashed
gone.
His bundle here. He is gone at the moment. But, of course, he's already resorted to violence once. I think that is also an important factor here. This guy grabbed a tire tool and chased these people around the front yard and threatened them. Swung the tire iron at them, tried to hit them, and eventually gave up and fled. But, again, under the totality of these circumstances, I don't believe the district judge's conclusion that exigent circumstances existed is clearly erroneous.
Okay.
I wanted to go over a couple more things. Judge Shaw, you asked me what was my best case, and I don't think I ever answered you. There are a number of cases. One of them is the Watson case. In that case, Mr. Watson sold drugs to a confidential informant, and he was arrested by the police in that case outside his home. And the reason that I cited the case is, of course, because when an arrest is made outside the home, the police don't automatically have the right to go in and do a protective sweep of the home. They have to show certain things, and one of the elements of that analysis is whether they had a reasonable belief that a person who could pose a danger is in the home. And some of the facts were very similar. There is a crime that occurs. outside the house. They go in. There's a couple other guys who are there, and they are secured. But the police say, we just didn't know who else might be in the house. We suspected that there were drugs in there. And, of course, in this case, the officers well knew there was a large quantity of drugs. We just simply didn't know. And the court in that case said that they upheld the warrantless entry. There is also
Isn't that thought of an outlier, that case where so they lack specific reasons, and all of our cases say there must be specific articulable reasons, and all he could say is the possibility always exists.
Yes, Your Honor.
I mean, I know that's a panel that approved that, but it is sounds like an outlier given all of our boilerplate time and time again that there must be specific articulable facts.
Well, I disagree that it's an outlier.
In the sense that it lies out there.
Well, let me talk about the De Jesus Batres case.
You have to deal with it.
In that case, the exigency argument was really made not with the police's entry into the initial residence. What happens is the police go in. They do have this information. These aliens are being held and threatened while their families are extorted for money. The exigency argument came in later because they waited 45 minutes and then decided they were going to search this detached garage. And again, the argument was the same. They simply did not know if anybody or anything could be in that garage that would pose a danger. In that instance, they did go in and they recovered a firearm that was lying in plain view in the open bed of a pickup truck. And one of the smugglers was also charged with the firearms offense. So that was evidence of that. But again, it was the uncertainty combined with the totality of the circumstances that made that warrantless entry into the detached garage permissible under the Constitution. And again, that in De Jesus Batres, the officers did not have any certain knowledge or any specific evidence telling them that someone could be in that garage. Also, just quickly, the Howard case, the Blunt case, the Maldonado case, and the Mata case.
You gave us Watson in a recent 28-J letter, and counsel opposite gave us the Morales.
Yeah. Yes, Your Honor.
And how do you reconcile those two if it's not an outlier? One of them it has to be.
Well, I think Morales is a little different because there were actually two holdings in that case. And one of the problem that he had in Morales, that the government had, was there was no probable cause even to enter. Of course, to make the warrantless entry into a residence, the government, the officers need probable cause plus the exigent circumstances. In Morales, all the officers had was an anonymous tip that two Hispanic males would be unloading cocaine at a certain address. The officers proceed there. It's a warehouse. They show up. They don't see anybody doing anything. So they go around to the back, and they look in somehow. They are able to peer into the warehouse, and all they can see are gloves and knees and movement consistent with taking something out of crates. So at that point, they go back around to the front. They pound on the door. They yell. They demand. They do not request to be, request somebody. They demand the door to be open. When the door is open, they rush in and basically arrest Mr. Morales and his co-defendant, Betancourt. And this court held, one of the holdings is no probable cause. And I believe in that case they also held that there was no exigency because the suspects were unaware of the police presence. That's certainly not the case in the instant case. Everyone in that house would no doubt have been aware after this big commotion in the front yard that the police were on their way or already there. So that is also distinguishable. As far as Watson and Morales having different outcomes, I think the facts of each are just very different.
And which one is this closer to?
I believe Watson is closer. You have a person who has committed the offense outside the home. Mr. Watson, by the time the police went into that house, he'd already been secured. He was no longer a threat to them.
Well, and the house wasn't the problem. This was a separate building altogether, wasn't it?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
I thought there was a separate garage. Am I looking?
Oh, that was the De Jesus Batres case. In Watson, it was simply a home, a house. So I think the facts are closer to Watson. And plus the fact they have conceded from the beginning, the officers did have probable cause with the information they had to believe
Randy,
that.
Randy, members, this panel on either of these inconsistent opinions?
Let me see, Your Honor.
We weren't on Watson.
I don't believe you're on Watson. Judge Shalley and Judge Weiner were both on Morales. But
on
Watson.
On we were both on what?
Morales.
Let me double check Watson.
No, that was.
That was
Jones, Smith, and DeMoss.
Yes, so no, you were not on that panel. And unless there are any further questions, I just want to close
by saying.
That's
not good news for you, though, is it?
I'm sorry.
Shalley and Weiner on the panel on the opinion that is contrary to the position you're arguing.
I understand that, Your Honor.
You want us to reconsider our views.
Yes, I want you to just look at the facts of this case, and I think Morales is totally and completely different.
Okay.
But in closing, I would urge the court to follow its precedent that it does not second guess the judgment of experienced officers in matters of safety. And to please affirm the trial court's decision in this case. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Alanis. Ms. Lando, you have some time for rebuttal.
The government claims that the entry here was reasonable under the totality of the circumstances. I would like to comment that the test is objective, not subjective. So it's not whether the officers subjectively were concerned. It's whether, given what we know, they should have been concerned. And we just don't know. They had no information to make that conclusion here. We didn't know whether there were people or weapons in there is a pretty terrifying explanation for entering into somebody's home without a warrant. And if the government, if this case is affirmed, it basically gives officers license to say the word large amount of narcotics as a justification without any further information to enter a home. And this court has never held that, ever. The Watson case is distinguishable. There, the suspects were at the house. That's a big difference between that case and this case. Where there are two, maybe there are more people, but where you know that the main suspect has fled, and the way that situation unfolded, there's nothing to indicate more people in the house, that cannot be exigent circumstances. So I don't think that the court need contravene Watson in any way. And I agree there is one element of fact that is different between Morales and this case, but I would argue that the fact that the people were unaware of the surveillance is a little bit like having the suspect flee. Judge Rievele, you had asked about what justification the officer proffered for his safety. One of the things, in addition to what the government said, is that an aggravated assault had just occurred. And again, I think that ties into the lack of exigency here because that had already happened. The weapon was still at the house, but the perpetrator had fled. And I just wanted to call the court's attention to a couple record sites. I had said earlier that Mrs. Garcia had described the amount of marijuana as being in bundles, and that is on page 65. And both Ms. Alanis and I noted that the description of what the officers did when they entered the house was that they cleared the house, and that discussion, that's pretty much the end of it, and it's on page 69. One other point I'd like to bring up is that, unlike other cases, this is not a fast-moving investigation. It's not a drug-filled neighborhood. It's not a gang-infested neighborhood. There's just no reason for the steps the police took here. It would have been enough for them to just secure the outside and wait for the warrant. And the government noted that Mr. Menchaca had, quote-unquote, resorted to violence once. He wasn't there anymore. And the violence that he resorted to, if you review the record, it really looks like he was trying to get those ladies out of his driveway so he could leave. It really doesn't bespeak guns or any other sort of violence. The court has no further questions. I'll conclude.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Ms. Landau. We call the next case of the day.